Our third case this morning is 2017-553, the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services versus Delphi Automotive Systems, LLC. You'll notice that Justice French is recused from this case, and in her stead is Judge Donna Carr from the 9th District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we will start then with the appellant, Mr. Ball.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. Michael Ball on behalf of the appellant, Delphi Automotive Systems, LLC. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case of first impression regarding Ohio's pseudo-dumping provision set forth in Revised Code Section 4141.24G. Ohio's pseudo-dumping provision was enacted in response to a congressional mandate aimed to prevent the sham transfer of businesses to shell companies or subsidiaries for the purpose of manipulating experience ratings and lowering unemployment tax rates. Here, the undisputed record evidence establishes that New Delphi, a new company with no employees in the state of Ohio, acquired certain assets of Old Delphi in a bona fide arm's length transaction. Simply put, this was not pseudo-dumping. This was not a sham transaction. In fact, it was approved by the federal bankruptcy court. New Delphi was not a shell company. New Delphi was not a subsidiary that was owned, managed, or controlled by Old Delphi. There was no, Oz behind the curtain controlling both sides of the transaction, as is required in order to support a finding of pseudo-dumping. There was no shuffling of employees around for the purpose of manipulating the unemployment tax rate.
Counsel, I just have a question while we're talking about that. In regard to self-identifying as a successor in interest, what is the significance of that, if any, for us, that New Delphi did originally do that?
I think there's no significance to that, in that it was corrected and that correction was accepted by the administrative agency at the time of the hearing. It was simply a erroneous filing, and that was corrected. So as the plain language of the relevant statute makes clear, Old Delphi's asset purchase does not fall, New Delphi's asset purchase does not fall within the purview of Ohio's pseudo-dumping provision, which only applies where, at the time of the transfer, one, both the transferor and transferee are employers under Ohio's unemployment tax scheme, and two, both employers are under substantially common ownership, management, or control. Judge Snyder in the Court of Common Pleas correctly found that neither requirement is satisfied in this case. Nonetheless, in an effort to force a square peg into the round hole that is Ohio's pseudo-dumping provision, the Court of Appeals opinion, one, fundamentally changed the definition of employer with respect to every single for-profit business in the state of Ohio, and number two, expanded the statutory term at the time of the transfer to include some amorphous, indefinite and uncertain period of time, expanding beyond the actual date on which the assets transferred. Tellingly, neither of those conclusions is supported by the record below or the findings of the Unemployment Compensation Review Commission. The UCRC expressly found that the transfer occurred on October 6, 2009. It did not find that there was an elongated period or any uncertain length of time encompassed within the transfer. It occurred on one date, October the 6th of 2009. It also found that any employment in the state of Ohio by New Delphi occurred after the time of the transfer. Also significantly, with regard to the definition of employer, that is not an argument that was ever advanced at the administrative level, at the trial court level, or at the appellate court level by the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. Rather, that is a new interpretation that was created whole cloth by the Court of Appeals to support the finding of pseudodumping. Now, that new definition is at odds with the public guidance that the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services is providing to employers in the state of Ohio on their website as of this morning. Now, it is not a position they have ever taken in any other case. It is not a position that the Court of Appeals has ever taken prior to its finding in this matter. Similarly, the Unemployment Compensation Review Commission provides guidance to Ohio employers in which it states that to become an employer in the state of Ohio, if you're a for-profit entity, you must employ one or more employees for a period of at least 20 calendar weeks. Yeah. The appellate court completely did away with the 20-week requirement that has been recognized for close to 50 years since the 1973 amendment, solely based on the omission of a comma. As the Supreme Court found in the Whitman case, a legislature does not hide elephants in mouse holes. If the Ohio legislator truly intended to fundamentally change the definition of employer and remove the temporal requirement, it would have done so with clear and plain language. It would not have added a clause intended to carve out small not-for-profit organizations and exclude a comma at the end of that clause to fundamentally change the existing statute with respect to every for-profit employer in the state of Ohio. Similarly, the somewhat problematic, the appellate court's new definition of employer renders related statutory provision 4141.01a1b meaningless. That provision states that as an alternative way to become an employer, you may employ one or more employees and pay in wages at least $1,500 in a calendar quarter. Once you do away with the temporal requirement in subsection A, the $1,500 requirement in subsection B is meaningless, because as soon as you employ one person for 1 hour, you are now an employer. And that simply cannot be the case. The legislature would not draft B to be a meaningless statute that would never come into play if it truly intended to exclude the 20-week temporal requirement for for-profit employers.
So, counsel, you would agree that your argument is that having the status of an employer under the statute is a foundational requirement here for anything, for the unemployment tax rate.
Certainly. If you are not an employer under the unemployment tax scheme, you have no unemployment tax liability.
So would that make your first proposition of law moot? If we would find that you were not an employer, let's say.
Yes, absolutely. If the court were to find that New Delphi was not an employer at the time of the transfer, then 4141.24g1, which only applies where the transferor and transferee are employers at the time of the transfer, clearly New Delphi would not meet that and would not be subject to Ohio's pseudodumping provision.
Thank you.
And in fact, both Judge Schneider and the Court of Appeals acknowledge that exact fact, that 4141.24g1 only applies where both parties are employers at the time of the transfer. And moving on to the court's problematic, elongated interpretation of the time of the transfer. Now, as I said before, that is at odds with the UCRC's finding that the transfer occurred on October the 6th of 2009. It also, the idea that a transfer is some amorphous and indefinite period is at odds with other statutory language. In fact, G1, the next sentence in that paragraph states, the director shall recalculate the rates of both employers, and those rates shall be effective immediately upon the date of the transfer. So G1 that uses the phrase at the time of the transfer clearly contemplates that the transfer occurs at a specific point in time. Now, likewise, in the administrative code section relating to voluntary and involuntary successorship, it sets forth a requirement that to apply for it to be a voluntary successor, the transferee must submit an application within 90 days of the date of the transfer. So there are many ways in which the statutory scheme depends upon a certain time period, a date certain for the transfer. And the mushy and uncertain elongated temporal time period is very problematic in that regard. Likewise, the court's attempt to expand the time of the transfer to include post-transfer activity is inconsistent with the purpose of pseudodumping and the plain language of the statute. So pseudodumping only applies where both entities are controlled by management, owner, or control at the time of the transfer. And what happens after the transfer may be relevant to other aspects of Ohio unemployment compensation tax law, but it is not relevant to whether or not an employer is subject to the predecessor's experience rate under subsection G1.
Well, you seem to be concentrating on ownership, and the appellee is concentrating on management.
Yeah, I'm certainly not intending to focus on ownership, but I believe any common ownership, management, or control, if that actually occurred in this case, and New Delphi was an employer, then certainly G1 could apply. However, even the review commission found, there was no common ownership between Old Delphi and New Delphi. There was no common control between Old Delphi and New Delphi. The only common management is that the managers of Old Delphi, prior to the transfer, subsequently became managers of New Delphi after the transfer. But again, that in and of itself is irrelevant to whether or not the transfer is under the purview of the pseudodumping provision.
What was the time span between the management's employment with the previous Delphi and the new Delphi?
So they were employed by Old Delphi up until the time of the transfer.
October 6, 2009. Okay.
They all resigned from their employment with Old Delphi, and subsequent to the transfer became employees of New Delphi.
24 hours? 48 hours?
I think the following day. And then, they were employed.
Okay, break in service, they were employed. Same position, same management responsibilities?
No, they were simply employed at that point.
They don't have to be, that was
correct. But then, the new Delphi's, new board of directors subsequently appointed them to executive positions, I believe it was 17 days after the time of the transfer. But I would argue that the 17-day period is a red herring, because it really doesn't matter if something is the next day or 17 days or a year later. What's important and the only thing that's relevant in the pseudodumping analysis is at the time of the transfer, were both parties owned, managed, or controlled by the same people or businesses? And clearly, that is not the case here. And the only way that the state is even arguing they're related is that after the transfer, they subsequently hired certain managers.
Was the new Delphi operational in any respects before October 6, 2009? Were they doing any business? Were they producing anything? Would they have any clients? Did they do anything?
It was not.
Okay, so there was no opportunity for anybody to do anything in a management position before the transfer, correct?
I mean, they had, there were two hedge funds that found the Delphi Automotive LLP, which later became DIP Holdco, which was the parent of New Delphi. And there were two hedge funds that owned that. They appointed two individuals who were the managers and officers of that entity, but it was an investment, in order to acquire assets of New Delphi. So prior to the transfer,
that was done prior to the October date.
Correct. They were not employed. They were not in the state of Ohio. There were no Ohio employees. But there was a hedge fund that formed this entity to then acquire the assets, or select Ohio assets of Old Delphi as part of the acquisition.
And this hedge fund had no relationship with Old Delphi?
None.
You're well into your rebuttal time.
Okay, I will rest. Thank you.
Ms. Bray?
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. Delphi tells us that the transfer law is intended to prevent a company from avoiding a higher unemployment compensation experience rate, but the rule they ask for is a roadmap to avoiding a higher rate. I want to pick up on a point that the Chief Justice asked about a few minutes ago. Delphi set up the same business with the same managers, over two-thirds of the same employees. It bragged in a press release about its continuity of management and conceded in forms initially filed with the department that New Delphi had acquired the existing business of Old Delphi. If you think about it, the managers that came over to New Delphi from the predecessor company had earned that unemployment experience rating. So this was not a new business, but a restart of an old business. The commission's decision is correct and should be affirmed. The Unemployment Compensation Fund is a trust fund, as you know, funded by contributions by Ohio businesses. If employers do not pay contributions at the full experience rate that's attributable to their business activities, what that means is other employers will have to step up and pay a higher rate to make up for that. And if the court were to allow the rule that Mr. Ball has advocated for, if the court were to allow companies to set up a shell company, claim new employer status, then move their managers over next week, but keep the new business rate, we can expect others to do this too, and then JFS will have no tool to deal with it.
Well, isn't the answer to that the legislature should just rewrite the law then?
Well, Your Honor, we think the law clearly allowed for what the department did in this case and what the Review Commission upheld. The Review Commission, in fact, I did want to, the statute talks about the transfer of a business with common management, and they clearly had the common management here. As the Chief Justice asked, they had.
Do they have common management at the time of transfer?
Yes, Your Honor. The transfer, we believe the correct reading of that is that it's a period of time. It may have begun on October 6th, but it didn't end any sooner.
Isn't that kind of a natural reading of transfer? Usually when we think of transfer of ownership or transfer of something, we think of a distinct period of time.
We might think of different periods of time for different things. For example, the American Revolution is a time period. It wasn't a day or a moment. And likewise here, the time to transfer a business using common sense usage to interpret that term, that the reality of it takes more than a day. It takes more than a moment.
Isn't that governed by a contract or something, some other document, some filings, et cetera? And there's dates that are connected to each one of those activities. What's the date of the signing of the contract? Maybe the contents of the contract may say that this is a transitional period of time, and here's the parameters of that. Is there anything in the transfer agreements that say that?
The master disposition agreement did provide, I believe, in section 1.11 for a date of closing, but it wasn't a date certain. It was several days after certain events had happened. So again, it contemplates
what month was that?
It didn't specify a date for the
closing. That was after the October 6th 2009
date? No, that would have been before.
Exactly. So that's, you know, my question here is, if you have a document and it's got a date on it, and you say that doesn't mean that date, it means a series of days, either before or after. What's the support for that, besides the American Revolution?
The support for that is just that it did take time to transfer this business. The company.
Are you talking about physically or legally? And that's the difference here.
The transfer of a business, Your Honor, is more than just the transfer of assets. It's also the transfer of employees, as the department's regulations recognize. So that happened here. As far as we can tell, that happened the next day, as he said. So that happened, you know, in other words, October 5th, people go home. They were employees of Old Delphi. October 6th, they come back. They're employees of New Delphi. That's the date they're talking about. The fact that the new board approved formally the new management team 17 days later, boards approve and ratify things all the time, but it doesn't change the fact, as the testimony showed, that they were employed the very next day, the day that they said this transfer happened or began, we would say began, they were employed that day and paid. And likewise, you have more than 800 out of 1,200 employees.
Counsel, are we bound by the bankruptcy court's findings?
No, in the sense that, I mean, in the sense that this result is not precluded by the bankruptcy court's findings, that the discharge in bankruptcy only...
Well, no, I'm talking about the finding of no continuity of ownership and the no successor liability, those findings. Are we bound by that?
Your Honor, those were for a different purpose.
I understand. I'm just saying, are we bound by those findings?
We don't believe that you are, Your Honor, because this is the statute on Ohio statute, the transfer law, is for the specific purpose of the unemployment compensation, and you're making a determination based on those standards, not based on what the bankruptcy court was looking at.
So we can ignore those findings?
I don't think they have any bearing here. Okay. Your Honor. I did want to mention also that the Review Commission did find that there were employees that transferred 67% on the very first day, so the court did find that they were an employer as of that day. There was a finding on that. We believe that was correct. I want to address the statutory argument that my opposing counsel made on the employer section. Obviously, we think the section in our brief talking about that is correct as a matter of statutory interpretation, but even if they were right about that, the fact remains you still have A1B of the employer definition, which we think was easily met here based on all the facts I've just recited. You have that requires $1,500 in wages in any calendar quarter of the current or preceding year. That's a fairly low standard. That's an easy standard to meet. It's one that most employers are going to satisfy in the state of Ohio. The employer definition isn't either or. You don't have to satisfy both. And so certainly, even if you had a question about the first part of that definition, the A1A, you certainly have A1B. And as I said, you had employees that were over there on the very first day. So certainly they were an employer. Very easy to see that in that fourth quarter of 2009, they would have had $1,500 in wages paid.
Is that a finding that was made?
It was not a finding by the Review Commission, but it certainly was in the record. The facts that are the basis for that were in the record.
In reading your arguments, it seemed like you were just arguing with having one employee and not the 1,500. The 1,500, according to your briefs, just mere surplusage, basically.
No, Your Honor. The 1,500 is the way that most employers are going to satisfy that test in the state of Ohio at this point. That 1,500 amount has been there for a long time, and under today's wages, that's going to be fairly easy for any employer to satisfy, apart from the other section. So in that sense, no, it is not surplusage.
Well, I was just going on the basis of what your briefs are arguing. I'm trying to figure that out.
understand, Your Honor. Again,
so basically you argued that the first section in regard to one employee was sufficient and without 20 calendar weeks.
We did, Your Honor. That's correct. And that's so, but as we say, you only have to be an employer under one section or the other. And the only reason that definition has any relevance to this case really is because of the transfer law. And we think for the purpose of the transfer law, they certainly were an employer at the time of the transfer. You don't have to be an employer the day before the transfer. You need to be an employer at the time of the transfer, and they certainly were. They had these employees. And additionally, as the brief points out, there were the other two subsidiaries of Old Delphi that New Delphi acquired as of that very first day, subsidiaries that had employees. That's in, I believe it's S-58 and S-59 of the supplement that we filed. You can see those forms. And so there's no basis to think that they didn't meet that standard. That's a fairly low standard. In terms of the time of the transfer, as we said, it is a multi-stage process. And the form that the company initially filed acknowledged that they had had a transfer. Even though they got to walk back some of that, the facts on that were before the commission amply supported the fact that they had common management at the time of the transfer with this other company. There was no gap of continuity in management here at all, as we've discussed. I mean, the press release that they talked about said the current leadership will continue to manage the company's global operations. I mean, that's the found it. It's JFS Exhibit C. I believe it's record page E2106-E1 is that press release. They were bragging about it. They wanted to assure their investors they had continuity of management. Makes perfect sense, but then it also makes sense for them to inherit the rate of the entity where there's continuity, the rate of the predecessor.
But counsel, you would agree, as I asked appellant, that if we don't find that New Delphi was an employer at the time, this kind of becomes moot.
That's correct, but again, we believe that Delphi was an employer under the standards that we've mentioned in our brief and today on those facts on the A1B section clearly met the employer status. And so then it's just a question of meeting the standard under Section G1 of the transfer law, which we believe they have. Common management, let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, what does that include? Is that the ownership of the business? No, what it includes is the day-to-day operations of the business, not necessarily the board of directors. And here you did have, as they admit, as was clear in the testimony, they had the common managers from day one. They had, one day they went home, they were employees of one, and the next day they were employees of the other. That you can't get much closer than that. And we believe that the Unemployment Compensation Review Commission, the decision was supported by substantial, reliable, probative evidence in accordance with law in viewing the whole record, and that New Delphi was an employer. It was, and they had common management with Old Delphi from the beginning of the transfer period, that there was, in fact, a transfer period, which makes sense given that it involved more than just the transfer of assets, but the transfer of whole parts of the business.
Counsel, according to the master disposition agreement, the closing of the transfer agreements will take place simultaneously with the closings, correct?
The
master disposition agreement is part of Exhibit C. Quote, the closing of the transfer agreements will take place simultaneously with the closing, close quote, correct? And then
that's what that agreement says, yes.
And it says the closing shall be defined, which is 2 business days after the date that all conditions set forth in Article 10, which is the conditions of closing, have been satisfied, correct? So there was a very specific moment or day, certainly, for the transfer.
There was a specific day perhaps for the asset transfer, and even there, I believe they had a mechanism to exclude certain assets if that were necessary. So it could take more than a day. And it makes sense that the transfer process in terms of transferring the business, which is what our statute talks about, transferring the employees over, which their documents referred to, that would take, that could take longer than that. That's why that rule makes sense. The statute talks about time of transfer, and that's a different concept necessarily than date of transfer. It's not limited to that. It really depends on the totality of the circumstances. I mean, one way to think about it is there's a bright line way to avoid liability for the predecessor's high unemployment compensation tax rate. That is, make sure you don't have the same managers. Hire new managers, and if you don't have common ownership or control, then you're going to avoid this statute, and that's an easy way to do it. But otherwise, it's a totality of circumstances standard, and that's why we have the review standard that we have about reliable probative evidence, and we have some review process for that, because you're going to have to look at that. Again, this statute was adopted, as my colleague concedes, that because the federal government wanted to curtail SUTA dumping. And the statute in Ohio, as it is written, we believe, covers this situation that we have here today and allows the department to do what it did. As Delphi bragged in his press release, management of old Delphi continued into new Delphi. And while Delphi may complain about inheriting its predecessor's unemployment compensation tax rate, those managers had earned that tax rate. As the commission correctly determined, they should keep that rate. We ask you to affirm the Court of Appeals.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few very brief points. My colleague repeatedly referred to continuity of management. I think we can all understand the difference between concurrent common management between both sides of the transfer versus continuity of management, where managers of the predecessor subsequently became managers of the transferee after the transfer. If the legislature wanted to
Was old Delphi still in business after October, 6th or 9th, 2009?
I do not believe they were.
They weren't. So there was nothing to manage?
Correct. These individuals resigned from old Delphi prior to becoming employed by new Delphi. They said, they argue there's continuity. Continuity is irrelevant to the pseudo-dumping statute. What the pseudo-dumping statute requires is concurrent common ownership management or control, which the record evidence establishes there was not. And regarding your question on the $1,500 for qualification as an employer, there's simply no evidence in the record to support a finding that that requirement was met. The state, in their briefing, is asking you to draw the assumption that somebody was probably paid $1,500. There's no evidence in the record to support that. And then with regard to the review commission's findings, they found common management based solely on the fact that employees were hired after the transfer. Now, they did not find that there was concurrent common management or that New Delphi had any employees until after the transfer. So as the Court of Common Pleas found, they simply misapplied the law in determining that post-transfer employment was relevant to either the question of whether or not New Delphi was an employer at the time of the transfer and whether or not New Delphi and Old Delphi were under common management at the time of the transfer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.